Hi, Odyssey fans. I'm Bob, producer of the Adventures in Odyssey Club.
And I'm Jesse, editor of Focus on the Family Clubhouse magazine. Welcome to the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast.
Coming up on the podcast, we'll be hearing part two of our interview with sound designers Christopher Deal and Nathan Jones about their work on One More Name.
But first, here's the latest news.
Focus on the Family is launching auditions across America to find the next Adventures in Odyssey voice.
And if all this sounds very familiar, you're right. It's the Get in the Show Contest 2017 edition.
Fans may remember that in 2012, listeners from all over the country sent us their video auditions.
We got more than 5,000 entries, and it all culminated with a big event here in Colorado Springs. Then our winner, Shona Kennedy, made her debut as Jules Kendall in the episode Life Expectancy.
This time around, the finale event is August 12th at Focus Headquarters, and the grand prize is a trip for four to the Bahamas on Focus on the Family's 40th anniversary cruise.
That in itself is an amazing prize, but there's more.
Indeed there is. Not only will the winner be on the cruise, he or she will also perform live with the Adventures in Odyssey actors during the 30th birthday live show.
We'll start accepting auditions on June 1st of this year, and we'll have a few podcasts between now and then to really launch this contest in style.
In the meantime, you can see contest rules, frequently asked questions, and more about the cruise right now at witsend.org/get in the show.
And now, let's hear the second part of our interview with Christopher Deal and Nathan Jones.
These two have been sound designers on Odyssey for more than a decade. We've had them on the podcast before, but this time around, we're chatting about the three-part club story, One More Name. Let's learn more about the production of this historical adventure. One of my favorite scenes is in part two, where Yrenna races back to find an empty ghetto, and she encounters Stefan in the street.
Irina!
Stefan! Where is everyone? Where are the children?
Gone. All of them.
No.
It happened so fast, I couldn't do anything.
Stefan, what happened?
The Nazis. They pounded on the orphanage door in the middle of the night. They took all of the children. The officers wouldn't even let me go with them. Then they raided all of the apartments along this street. Shoshana and Ariella are gone, Irina.
What? No, no.
They took everyone to the train for Treblinka.
I need to get to that train.
I'll go with you.
No. You stay here. Hide in the garbage bin in case the officers return for you. I'll be back soon. We're getting you and Ariella out of this ghetto. Today.
As they're talking, the distance between them and the echo of hollowness and the loneliness is so powerful, and that dog barking in the distance. Nate, I was there when we recorded this. It was two actors in headphones sitting in chairs 3 feet apart. Yet the picture it paints in your mind's eye is so vivid. That is an amazing piece of work. Tell us about that.
That scene was part continuity and part stripping down, because Chris had already spent the time to develop what the ghetto sound was. So it's, you know, not good for me to go ahead and reinvent a new ghetto. So basically, I took Chris's ideas, and then I had the sound effects that he pulled from, and I thought, okay, so everybody gets vacuumed out of the ghetto. Whew. What's left? Well, the traffic really isn't going to be steady. That goes. People in the streets, that goes. And when people get evacuated out of a place, pets usually get left behind. So the dog gets to stay. So then the next question becomes, okay, well, when you take all of that sound away, what conveys something still there? So we add some wind, put that wind effect back into it. And then what I did was, when I had my alleyway city kind of a reverb going, the sound of the wind is now echoing off of the buildings.
Mm.
So that increases that picture. And so I think in the scene there might be some distant traffic, but that is to simply say that there's a world outside of what's currently happening within the ghetto, but right, the ghetto itself is absolutely bare. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the picture.
Well, it was a haunting, I say, image, because it really did put an image in my mind that I had a hard time letting go of. Of the three parts, I think that's the moment that stood out for me most.
Wow.
Part one ends differently than most Odyssey episodes, at least in terms of the sound design. Let's hear that.
We must hurry.
The Lord watch over you.
Erin, you mustn't cry now. You must be silent. You must.
In the Book of Esther, the newly
crowned queen. So usually we hear the music come up and go out to Chris. So why did you decide to end the episode this way?
There's such a heaviness about what's going on at this time. And I just felt like it was a moment to really kind of reflect on the fact that there's a separation between this mother and this child. And then we hear the train, which we find out later on represents these families being sent off, they thought to these work camps, but more so to these death camps. And so it's more of this foreshadowing to what is coming in the next parts. And just to really kind of put an emphasis on the heaviness of what's going on even now and more so as we move through the story.
Okay, let's jump ahead to a scene from part 3.
The world needs more heroes like Irina Sendler.
I'm no hero. The opposite is true. I regret that I've done so little.
Irina, you've done more than most. Now you need to wait patiently and trust God. He will show you what is next.
You sound like my mother.
She must be a very wise woman.
I think she is. When the SS officers dragged me out of my house, my mother gave me a hug and slipped this card into my hand.
Jesus, I will trust in thee.
This was a very personal scene between Irina and Sophia, and much of that comes through in the quality of their voices. Obviously, guys, a lot of that is from the actor's performance, but listeners might not realize the role you played here. Nate, what do you do in production to give us that intimate and claustrophobic sound?
Well, this is one of those prime examples of big space, no reverb on a voice. They're whispering, so they're not really projecting. They're not like, being real loud, so they're not going to hear a bunch of reverb coming off the walls because they're obviously talking about private stuff, and they continue to do so throughout the show. So the idea is to make it feel like if we were watching a film that we've now gone really close up. So what you do is you sort of create this proximity closeness. There's a richer bass in the voice. They are whispering, but the volume is still pulled up. And so it gives you that feeling that you really are that close. And so by taking the reverb off of it, that tricks your mind into thinking, okay, well, they're definitely not talking loud enough to create verb. So it's a little flim-flam on the old noggin.
It sounds like the two actors performed that scene in one take, but how many takes was that scene actually built from?
It's probably from a handful. I think for a scene like that, the director really has to key in to make sure that the closeness is being presented and then the performance also matches the closeness. That there are just certain things that the director is responsible for to get that kind of performance. You'll end up having one take and they'll kind of read through it and it's kind of reedy or, you know, might have some gems in it, but then the second one gets dialed in more and then the third take gets dialed in a little bit more. Usually you kind of hit your sweet spots right around there. A good director knows, okay, well, if I push this any further, it's just going to get worse.
So what are you thinking about when you're going through the whole scene and choosing the take? Are you editing it to craft a new performance or are you just trying to highlight something that the director was able to get out of the actors?
Well, picking sections from different takes hinges on quality of the performance, telling the story as we see it on script. So honestly, it gets into a third part, and that is going to be, is it intelligible? Because sometimes we have great performances, but somebody's like, blah, 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 and you're like, okay, well, that was so emotive, but I don't know what you said. So it's a fine balance between those three things to get the right take. And so I'll put it together to the best of my ability, and then we have a voice playback, and then the director will sit in and say, oh, you know, that felt great, but couldn't understand them. Do we have a better take?
Yeah, and you got to hope that they take breaths in the right spots so that way you can kind of cut and paste if you need to, right?
Yeah, hopefully.
Something that I appreciate in a scene like this, there's not a lot of action going on, but I know that there's a lot of care given in pacing as far as the dialogue and just the subtleties of movement with Foley and with the sounds in the background. I think Nate did a great job trying to really paint the picture that we do have in this scene. You can overdo it. You don't want to put so much in that that's all you hear, but just those moments when you know that you need some sort of push or accent to just help the voices be able to really give the performance they need.
Well, that scene in prison is very tender. You guys note where the scene needs music cues, and then you send that off to composer John Campbell. What was your goal for this scene, and what did you tell John?
Well, if you listen to the scene, and you listen in particular where the music starts, it's basically a turning point. It's a point where now Sophia is now speaking a little bit more life into Irena's situation. So what you hear there is the music cue starts there because it kind of ushers in this turn. From that point, it's in John's ball court. He's assembled a palette of instruments and a theme and stuff that he wants to convey as well. And so what you'll hear is he starts out with a woodwind that gives you sort of a dark feeling, but it's also kind of warm. It's kind of singular. Mm-hmm. So it has this teeter-tottering on two points. And then you can hear the music slowly turn into a bit of an uplift with the strings and things like that. And all of that plays in with the dialogue to help bring forward the emotion to get the listener to identify with the emotion of what's happening.
Yeah, now Nate, you're a musician as well. Do you ever find yourself maybe recommending certain instruments to John or how long a cue should last, or you just kind of turn it over to him and let him deal with that?
The most that I ask with John is I give him some ideas of what I'm thinking. John's really awesome, so I can tell him what I'm thinking or a particular era or something like that, and he's really good at dropping the glue in the cracks. You know, he knows how to go through and go, okay, well, I think this is the direction, and I think this is what we're talking about.
Chris, would you say that it's because you've worked with John for so long that you guys really kind of know each other shorthand?
John has been doing it for a long time for us, so he really does understand the mode of Odyssey and how to move those scenes forward. On this particular series, this story arc that we're doing, John had done a certain score for us on Oliver Twist, and I really liked the sound palette that he had used on that. And so, you know, I kind of directed him a little bit in maybe thinking that way. Different time period, so mm-hmm. It's going to be different kind of music, but just maybe some of the same instruments, because there is that sound of, you know, we're dealing with children and we're dealing with a dark subject at times, and to have those solo instruments, as Nate described, the woodwinds and how they pull out a certain emotion, that was something we were looking for. And then, you know, you just kind of tell John a little bit and then he runs with it.
Mm. Was there any particular scene that really stood out as being just a really difficult one to put together for you?
Yeah, I think most transitional scenes when you're going from environment A to environment B to environment C, I think anytime you've got to do that, like we talked about with Chris's scene where he goes into the courthouse, the one that I had was basically the smuggling of a child via the sewer system.
Yeah.
So we start out above ground in a ghetto and we open up a manhole.
There.
There's a ladder along the side.
Where does it go?
Into the sewer.
It smells bad.
I know, but it will only be for a short time.
Here, take my hand, Ariela.
She's Caroline now. We must get her accustomed to that.
Caroline.
Hurry along. The officer on duty will be back soon.
I'm going.
You're next, Irena.
And then we smuggle the child down inside the manhole into the sewer.
It's slippery.
Be careful.
Heinrich, over here!
Hurry, Stefan.
It all gets hurried up by German officers that are coming onto the scene.
Right.
So, trying to create a manhole and a sewer and to make that transition happen was very challenging. So I had to come up with a manhole cover. I don't have a manhole cover.
Yeah, I don't think the city would appreciate you taking one off the street.
I can't just go out there.
So they found it then,
yeah, I just can't go out there and jimmy one up and, you know, bring it into the Foley room and play with it. So I went down to the workout room here at Focus and I grabbed a 45-pound plate.
That's great.
And I carted it down and brought it into the Foley room. And when I got it in there and started playing with it to be the manhole cover, I quickly realized that it gave me a chance to showcase something.
Mm.
So I suspended this 45-pound plate between two pieces of wood, mic'd the underside of it, and then kept the same boots on and everything that I had for the German soldiers and just continued to do their foot movement on that.
Are you sure you saw someone?
I thought so.
This section was cleared earlier. There shouldn't be anyone here.
We should search those apartments again, just in case.
Check the trash bins too.
Yeah, boy.
And then we proceed to crawl down a metal-type ladder into the sewer and had to fabricate that as well. I'm just fortunate I didn't break my neck that day.
Well, every time we have you guys on the podcast, I'm always amazed at the thought and the talent level that you guys have, that you bring into the show. So thanks for revealing some of those secrets and spending some time with us today.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
No worries. Thank you.
You can hear all three parts of One More Name in the Adventures in Odyssey Club right now. Plus, you can hear the latest album there, number 62, Let's Put On a Show.
If you're not a club member and you've been waiting patiently for album 62, well, it's almost here. The first episode airs April 1st on the radio and online. Let's hear a preview now.
On the next adventure in Odyssey, Connie has an assignment from her counseling class.
One of the requirements for introduction to counseling is that I practice therapy on a friend.
But when she finds a victim, a patient...
You're reading your instructions?
You're my first client, Eugene.
She offers some strange advice.
Ask him about his feelings, but have him associate colors or animals with them.
Don't miss the next adventure in Odyssey.
Check out Connie the Counselor on April 1st. This episode also features the return of Jules Kendall to Odyssey, so you won't want to miss it.
Album 62 also features stories with Buck Oliver, a new character named Wilson Knox, and a musical adventure. Find out more about what's coming up at witsend.org/podcast.
That's all for this edition of the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast, a presentation of Focus on the Family. That website again is witsend.org/podcast.
Or you can call us at 1-800-A-FAMILY. I'm Bob.
And I'm Jesse, reminding you that with God in your life, every day's an adventure.